I will. I'll ask him about that. That's the other question.
All right, let's be in order, please. Ms. Smith, you're ready. Mr. Sagsveen, you're ready. Commissioners, ready. Let's go. Ms. Smith?
I would call Terry Fasteen.
Mr. Fasteen, as you have heard, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. You raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Fasteen, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Smith.
Could you please state your full name?
Yes, my name is Terry Fasteen.
And by whom are you employed?
I'm employed by Cattermas Lee & Jackson.
And what is your business address?
1505 30th Avenue South in Moorhead, Minnesota.
And please discuss briefly your education and your work history.
I've got a civil engineering technology degree. I'm a licensed real estate salesperson in Minnesota. I've been employed with Cattermas Lee & Jackson for about the last 28 years. During that time, I've worked as a survey crew chief, construction manager, right-of-way agent, and currently I'm in charge of the right-of-way group for Cattermas Lee & Jackson.
And what is your role with respect to the proposed project?
I am the right-of-way task leader. I manage a right-of-way effort.
And could you discuss then what that role entails?
Yes, I provide oversight for our group for the production of documents that we use when we meet with landowners. I do a work schedule and schedule the agents to go meet with landowners. We do the title work reports, surface ownership. I do the training of the agents for the project-specific duties that they're going to do. I provide the communication link between Minn Kota Power and the right-of-way agents. And I attend and do public presentations with the group.
And how do you coordinate with Minn Kota on right-of-way acquisition?
We coordinate daily with Minn Kota Power by telephone, by email. We have project-specific documents that we use to document landowner requests that we fill out and forward on to them. We have several weekly meetings with Minn Kota Power, right-of-way specific meetings, meeting as a general group, and also a public information group. We also have quarterly training sessions directly with the right-of-way people from Minn Kota Power so that we're providing the best information we can to our landowners.
And could you describe the process of contacting and negotiating with landowners to obtain eventually the easements, but in this case right now, the easement options?
Sure. Usually we start out with a personal phone call to each landowner to try to set up a meeting. If we're unable to reach them by telephone, we will send out a general mailing, again, to try to get some contact with these landowners. And in some cases, we've had to send out certified mail. Once we've set up a meeting, the agent will go either to that landowner's residence or a place designated by them to have this conversation. Once the agent meets with the landowner, we'll do a general project description, what the project intent is, what the goals are. Then we'll start going over the specific details. The agents will take each individual document that's going to be used and go over that with the landowner to explain it to them so they understand the legal aspects of each document, what they're signing, what the result of their signing will be. We also present them with a draft easement document as to what the actual easement specifics would be when we get to that stage. We also present them with a written offer of what would be offered when we acquire the easement and define how it would be paid and when. The agents also document the questions that come from the landowners in writing. At the end of every conversation, the agent will go somewhere and write up a record of conversation that becomes a part of our project transference of information to the Minn Kota Power.
So how are landowner requests or comments handled then?
What we do is, again, we transcribe our meetings with those landowners, put it in writing. If the landowner has a specific request, during our meetings we show them the locations or potential locations of structures. Should that landowner want to shift that structure, we have a form that we indicate which pole we're working with and get the landowner to tell us where they'd like to see us move that pole. If there's a request for a reroute, we'll go through a little more extensive process of documenting that. And once those requests are brought in from the agents, we usually have a debriefing on the end of the week or the start of the week. We'll transfer that information to Minn Kota Power and the other design staff members for analysis.
And besides easement negotiations, are there any other reasons that you contact landowners?
Yes, currently the right-of-way group, since we've been talking with landowners since the inception of the project, there's a lot of studies and reports that need to be done by the other project partners, such as cultural surveys or wetland surveys. We do phone calls to let the landowners know that we would like to get access to their properties. So we've made multiple calls on behalf of ourselves to set up landowner meetings and the other project members to get access to the project or property to do that.
And what do you do if someone doesn't want to talk to you about any of this at all to do with a project?
We'll document that in our database. We'll pass it on to other landowners. We do, however, know that sometimes people change their minds. So when we have a need or one of the other groups have a need to get on a piece of property, we may contact those landowners again just to see if there's any potential movement on their thought process.
Okay. And Mr. Hennessy and Mr. Phillips discussed some of the concerns that landowners raised regarding transmission lines. Are there any other concerns besides what's already been mentioned in the testimony that you can think of that you have come across?
I think they've touched on virtually every one of those. Again, some of the biggest issues is how do we site the location of our corridor? Where would the structures actually go if they were placed on a property? What type of compensation would we be giving the landowners? How it was determined? Why not annual payments? Impacts to farming or impacts to health issues to livestock or to residents of the farms?
And again, how many miles of line are under option by Minn Kota at this time?
As Mr. Hennessy pointed out earlier, there's about 57% of line miles currently under option, or about 139 miles.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Sagsbean?
I have no questions.
Mr. Lehan?
No questions.
Commissioner Kramer?
I have just a couple, Terry. Thank you for your testimony. How are agents compensated? Is there an incentive built in, or what we might think of in sales as some sort of extra compensation, or is it just a straight salary or hourly wage?
The agents we have working in the field are employed by Catermas, Lee & Jackson. It's on an hourly basis, so there is no additional compensation.
Okay. Is there an incentive for KLJ, depending on success rate or anything like that?
No, there isn't.
Okay. What's the most common objection to the project by landowners?
The initial one is always, why did you pick us? and from there it moves on to compensation or impacts to the farming operation.
Have you seen a dramatic increase recently in requests for or inquiry about annual payments?
Yes, we have, with the resultant development of the wind farms.
Sure.
Comes up quite often.
I'll bet. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Commissioner Kalk?
Just maybe one. Thank you, Terry, for your testimony. The
go through a scenario, the landowner, they don't want nothing at all. And eventually they call you up and say, okay, come on, let's talk. And they say, I'll let you put it across here if you put a pole there and a pole there and a pole there. How much would landowner preference where poles be actually be able to happen?
Actually, we are able to accommodate a lot of those requests. It also depends upon design restrictions. Again, it was talked earlier about the amount of spacing between the poles. So it's a lot of the requests for shifts are also based on what happens either upstream or downstream from their properties. But we've been able to accommodate quite a few requests up to this point.
Okay. I suspect that goes a long ways if they can have a say where the stuff might end up at.
Yes, it is. And we're able to provide them that opportunity.
All right. Thank you. That's it.
Follow up, Ms. Smith?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Sagsveen?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Lean?
No questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fasteen.
Thank you.
And our final witness is Brian Hunker.
Mr. Hunker, do I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes.
Mr. Hunker, as you know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years, or both. If you raise your right hand, please. Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Hunker, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Ms. Smith.
Could you please state your name for the commission?
Brian Hunker.
And by whom are you employed?
HDR Engineering.
And what is your business address?
701 Xenia Avenue South, Suite 600, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And what's your educational background?
I received a Bachelor's of Science from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I've got about 10 years environmental consulting experience.
And could you tell the commission about your work history?
Sure. Throughout my career, I've gained extensive experience in project management, compliance, and permitting experience, working on linear energy projects, for example, transmission and pipeline projects. I have a broad understanding of the regulatory framework relating to federal and state environmental review documentation, have led routing studies, gathered environmental and land use data through windshield analysis and field work. I've analyzed data using GIS and participated in agency meetings and public open houses.
And what is your role with respect to the proposed project?
Environmental consulting project manager.
In that role, what do you do?
I've managed technical staff, field studies, preparation of reports, permit applications, as well as assist in agency consultations.
So were you involved in the environmental analysis of the project corridor?
Yes.
And were you also involved in the preparation of the certificate of corridor compatibility application?
Yes.
And what was the overall approach to environmental analysis of the proposed project?
The primary components of environmental analysis include data acquisition, mapping, stakeholder, and public involvement. Publicly available GIS data was collected relating to natural resources, cultural resources, and land use issues from federal and state data clearinghouses and agencies. Then field assessments and public outreach were conducted. Stakeholder comments were entered into the GIS database. The environmental data was combined with data on electrical reliability factors, engineering feasibility, and cost. This data was analyzed to determine the potential opportunities and constraints.
And could you give us just a general description of the project corridor from an environmental perspective?
Sure. In general, the project corridor is rural and intensively farmed or pasture land, interspersed with rural homesteads, open lands, and water, as well as transmission and distribution lines. Cultivated crop lands are more prevalent in the eastern portion of the project towards the Red River Valley, whereas pasture and wetlands are more prevalent in the western portion of the corridor towards the Missouri River. The project corridor contains undulating terrain in the western sections within the prairie pothole region near the major rivers. Otherwise, the eastern half is nearly level in the Red River Valley. Wetlands are typically small, isolated depressions, but may also be found along drainage ways, streams, rivers. Trees are sporadic throughout the project and are primarily present at wooded draws and riparian areas and windrows. Currently, the most common wooded areas are around shelter belts and buildings. The major rivers have a wooded riparian fringe, and they include the Missouri and the Cheyenne rivers.
And are you familiar with the exclusion areas, the avoidance areas, the selection criteria, and the policy criteria that are set forth in the Commission's rules?
Yes.
And when analyzing the project corridor, did Minn Kota and HDR take into consideration the exclusion areas, the avoidance areas, the selection criteria, and the policy criteria?
Yes.
And could you please discuss whether any exclusion areas are located within the project corridor?
Sure. As shown in Table 3.1-1 of the corridor application, which is Exhibit 3, there's one exclusion area present within the project corridor, but impacts to this exclusion area will be avoided by the project. The exclusion area is called areas critical to the life stages of threatened and endangered species. In this particular case, it's critical habitat for the federally threatened piping plover. The Missouri River is designated critical habitat for the piping plover. The project will span the Missouri River. There will be no direct impacts within this designated critical habitat. Structures will be placed approximately 150 feet back from the river's bank. Minn Kota will not construct across the Missouri River during the typical breeding season for the piping plover. During construction, no equipment will be located within the Missouri River. The RUS has engaged the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Section 7 consultation. In the Section 7 consultation process as a part of the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, process to ensure that the project will not endanger the continued existence of any listed species or adversely modify designated critical habitat.
And Mr. Hennis talked about this a little bit as well, but you mentioned Section 7 consultation. Could you explain what a Section 7 consultation is?
Sure. It's Section 7 of the Endangered Species Act that requires all federal agencies to conserve threatened and endangered species and consult with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to ensure that a project won't jeopardize the species or designated critical habitat.
And what's the status of that Section 7 consultation?
Currently, the Rural Utility Service, or RUS, Minn Kota, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are determining the appropriate conservation measures for the federally listed species.
And are there any other exclusion areas present within the corridor?
No. However, we'd like to clarify that although areas containing unique or rare plant or animal species are present, these areas and species will not be irreversibly damaged.
And could you please discuss whether there are any avoidance areas located within the project corridor?
Sure. The avoidance areas present within the project corridor are discussed in Table 3.2-1 of the corridor application, Exhibit 3. And I'll briefly describe these avoidance areas present and how the project will avoid these areas. The first criteria is designated or registered national wildlife areas. There are two waterfowl production areas, or WPAs, located within the corridor. These are called the Hornwort and Gaub WPAs, and there's one wildlife development, or WDA, located within the corridor, and this is the East Park Lake WDA. Minn Kota will develop a route that avoids the WPAs and WDA.
And Mr. Hunker, I know that it was asked earlier where those are located. Mr. Lean had asked that. Can you provide that information to him?
Sure. The Hornwort WPA... I'm going to jump back. The Gaub WPA is on map 12C, and it's kind of in the lower left-hand corner.
Is that exhibit 12C, Mr. Hunker?
Correct. It's down in here.
And you're pointing then to the lower left-hand corner of the map, right?
Correct.
Of Exhibit C, 12C?
Correct.
Have all 12 exhibits been admitted?
Yes.
Okay. I just couldn't remember if it was the three sub-12s that have been put up.
No, they were all Exhibit 12.
Next WPA is a Hornwort WPA. That's on Exhibit 12E. That again is in the on the left-hand section of the map. And the East Park Lake WDA is on map 12B. Sorry to make you jump back and forth here. That's basically right in the middle, right along Highway 41 here.
And then are there any other avoidance areas that are located within the project corridor?
Yes, there is. Next criteria, designated and registered state management areas. There's one wildlife management area, the Wilbert Bolt WMA, that is located within the corridor. Minn Kota will work with the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and no structures will be placed within or lines will cross this WMA. And this facility is located on map 12A. It's about a mile east of the center substation. It's again on the left-hand side.
For the record, the witness refers to Exhibit 12A. Mr. Hunker, I'm jealous of the record. It's an exhibit, not a map, please.
Sorry. Next criteria are historic resources not designated as exclusion or avoidance areas. There are 11 previously recorded archaeological resources within the North Dakota State Historic Preservation, or SHPO, database that are present within the corridor. Also within the corridor are 12 historic structures previously recorded within SHPO's database. None of these resources will be impacted by construction or operation of the project. And Minn Kota will conduct a Class 3 Cultural Resources Field Investigation on the high probability areas in accordance with SHPO guidelines to avoid impacting cultural resources previously identified. RUS and Minn Kota are engaged in the Section 106 consultation process to consult with the SHPO, Native American tribes, and others on the project. The product of this process is a programmatic agreement, or PA, to address the Class 3 field survey, treatment plan, and monitoring. Under the PA, Minn Kota will develop an unanticipated discoveries plan to establish procedures that will be followed if cultural resources are unexpectedly encountered during construction, and this plan is being reviewed by SHPO.
And you mentioned a Section 106 consultation. Can you explain what a Section 106 consultation is?
Under NEPA, in order to comply with Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, federal agencies must consider effects to historic properties and afford the opportunity for comment by the Advisory Council on Historic Properties.
And what's the status of the Section 106 consultation?
Programmatic agreement has been sent to the required signatories and the invited signatories for review and signature.
And could you explain what a programmatic agreement is?
Sure. Again, a programmatic agreement, or PA, is a document that spells out the terms of a formal legally binding agreement between agencies, and the PA establishes a process for consultation, review, and compliance with one or more federal laws. In context of Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act, PAs are used for unanticipated discoveries.
And are there other avoidance areas present within the project corridor?
Yes.
Could you please discuss those further?
Sure. Next criteria is a corridor within 500 feet of a residence. There are four occupied residents and one vacant but occupiable home located within the corridor. Minn Kota will develop a route within the project corridor that maximizes setbacks from residences. If locating a route within 500 feet of an occupied residence is preferable due to other routing factors, Minn Kota will work with the affected landowner to obtain a waiver of this 500-foot setback requirement. If waivers cannot be obtained, Minn Kota will be able to develop a viable route within the project corridor that will satisfy this 500-foot setback, as well as other siting requirements.
And this number of residences within the corridor, is that different than what was proposed in the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility application?
Yes, as originally filed, the application had, or the corridor had seven homes. within the, or yeah, seven homes are within the corridor, and that number has been dropped now to five.
And why is that number changed?
Due to two route shifts that Mr. Ennis discussed.
Okay. And are there other avoidance areas that you'd like to discuss?
Yes. Next criteria, water sources for organized rural water districts. McCluskey Canal will be crossed by the project corridor, and no impacts are anticipated to the canal or water availability for rural water districts. Rural water pipelines are potentially present within the corridor, and no impacts are anticipated. Minn Kota will survey four underground utilities in order to avoid these impacts. Next criteria is irrigated land. There's one central pivot irrigation system located within the project corridor, and this system will be avoided by a route within the corridor. Last avoidance criteria is areas of recreational significance not designated as exclusion areas. The North Country National Scenic Trail, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, and the Chain of Lakes Recreational Area, McCluskey Canal, are located within the corridor. Minn Kota will span these trails and the Chain of Lakes Recreation Area. Visual impacts will be minimized by the placement of structures, by placing structures away from the features to the extent practical. Access to these features will be maintained so that recreational activities may continue. There is no reasonable alternative to crossing these features since the trail runs parallel to the Missouri River and the McCluskey Canal. Minn Kota proposes to cross the Missouri River near existing transmission line and cross the Chain of Lakes along State Highway 41.
And will any significant adverse effects resulting from the location, construction, and operation of the project within the project corridor as they relate to the selection criteria set forth in the Commission's rules be at an acceptable minimum or managed and maintained at an acceptable minimum?
Yes, and the selection criteria is outlined in Section 3.1 and Table 3.3-1 of the corridor application, Exhibit 3.
And were environmental studies conducted for the project?
Yes.
And could you please identify what studies were conducted and when any applicable reports were or will be filed with the Commission?
Sure. There's a number of environmental studies were conducted over the course of developing the project corridor. The studies that were filed with the application include the following: the macro corridor study, which is Exhibit B to the application, scoping report, which is Exhibit C, or Appendix C to the application, environmental assessment with scoping, Appendix D to the application, cultural resources Class 1 literature search, Appendix F to the application, and the raptor nest survey, Appendix G to the application. In addition, some field work has recently been completed on additional environmental studies. Once the reports are complete, they will be filed in conjunction with the route permit application. These include the wetland delineation report, Class 3 cultural resources inventory, architectural survey, and the tree inventory.
And were all of the studies conducted and the reports that have been completed to date prepared under your supervision and control?
Yes.
Could you briefly discuss the key reports that have been prepared?
Yes, I'd like to highlight a couple of these reports. The first being the environmental assessment with scoping, again, Appendix D to the application. The RUS, an agency that administers the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Utilities Program, is required to complete an environmental analysis prior to providing financial assistance for the project. This environmental analysis is in accordance to the RUS's guidelines titled Environmental Policy and Procedures for Implementing NEPA. The outcome of the EA is that the EA proposed three route alternatives and 39 segment alternatives and identified a preferred route alternative, which was used as the basis for the proposed corridor in the corridor application. Next study that I'd like to highlight is the Cultural Resources Class 1 Literature Search, Appendix F to the application. The purpose of this literature search was to determine the location of previously recorded cultural properties and surveys, archaeological surveys, architectural surveys, and archaeological sites within the macro corridor, and to assess the potential for the presence of unrecorded archaeological resources within the macro corridor. This report found a total of 242 cultural resource investigations that have been completed within the macro corridors. These cultural resource investigations yielded 270 archaeological sites, 410 architectural properties, and 277 isolated sites. As a result of these findings, the Class 3 report or Class 3 inventory was recommended.
In addition to the formal studies that you've just discussed, were there any other key analyses of the project corridor conducted?
Yes, as Mr. Phillips discussed in his testimony, EMF fields were calculated for the project. In addition, audible noise from the transmission line was modeled and found no significant effects. We conducted visual simulations of the structures that were completed for the public meetings. Floodplain analysis were completed for the Missouri River, the Cheyenne River, and the English Coulee. We conducted an overview study for high-quality native prairie areas, and we've also conducted our suitable hooping crane habitat was identified.
And both you and Mr. Hennis have testified that the proposed project is undergoing a federal NEPA review process. I take it that as environmental consulting project manager, you have been involved with that process?
Yes.
And so you are familiar with the purpose and components of the NEPA review process?
Yes.
What is the purpose of the NEPA review process?
Well, Minn Kota is requesting financing assistance from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Rural Utilities Service to construct the project. The RUS is an agency that administers the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Utilities Program. It is required to complete an environmental analysis prior to approving this financial assistance. The RUS is following its policies and procedures. Again, it's titled Environmental Policy and Procedures for Implementing NEPA. In order to ensure compliance with NEPA and related laws, regulations, and executive orders.
And could you explain what the NEPA review process entails?
Well, first, the applicant files a Notice of Intent, or NOI, to prepare an EA and hold scoping meetings. Then the agency holds scoping meetings that identify potential project effects and concerns that would be addressed in the EA document, and then you draft a scoping report. Next step is to draft an environmental assessment that discusses the purpose and need, the reasonable and feasible alternatives, description of the proposed action, and reviews the affected environment with impacts and mitigation of the proposed action. Then the EA is released for a 30-day comment period. Following this comment period, an EA comment report is issued with responses to the comments received during that 30-day comment period, and issuance of findings by the RUS. And as mentioned earlier, the RUS is also engaged in Section 7 consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Section 106 consultation with SHPO and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
And Mr. Hennis testified the NEPA review process provides opportunities for public involvement, and I take it that is also true for agency input. Is that right?
Yes, as shown in Exhibit 9, and as discussed in the application, there have been many opportunities for input by the general public as well as federal and state agencies. For public participation, as Mr. Hennis discussed, there has been about 18 meetings. About 800 people have attended these meetings, and we received about 300 comments. For the federal, state, and local agency participation, we have attended interagency meetings at the Corps office. The RUS has hosted the agency scoping meeting, and Minn Kota has attended county commissioner meetings. We've also engaged the tribes through letters, conference calls, meetings, Missouri and Cheyenne River field reviews, a programmatic agreement, and offering them the opportunity to monitor augering locations of the structures.
And I believe Mr. Hennis testified that the expected result is a finding of no significant impact or a FONSI, and that it's anticipated in 60 to 90 days. Is that correct?
Yes.
And earlier, Mr. Phillips testified that the factors set forth in North Dakota Century Code Section 49-2209 were considered when selecting the project corridor. Would you concur with that testimony?
Yes, the discussion of these factors is provided in Section 8 on pages 8-1 and 8-4 of the application Exhibit 3.
And I want to just focus on the last two factors set forth in Section 49-2209. Section 10 of that provision requests information regarding any anticipated effects of selecting the proposed corridor on areas which are unique because of biological wealth or because they are habitats for rare and endangered species. In addition to the information that's provided in Section 8.10 of the corridor application, is there any other information that you would like to present to the Commission today?
Yes, in Sections 5.14, 5.15, and 5.16 of the application, discusses conservation measures that Minn Kota will implement to avoid and minimize effects to biological resources in the vicinity of the project corridor. In addition, the RUS, Minn Kota, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are determining the appropriate conservation measures for the federally listed species through the Section 7 consultation process. As a result, the impact of the project on vegetation, wildlife, and sensitive species is expected to be minimal.
And with respect to Section 11 of that particular provision, Section 49-2209, could you please discuss whether any problems or concerns were raised by federal or state agencies or local entities that were not specifically addressed in Section 8.10 of the corridor application? Actually, it should be 8.11 of the corridor application. Excuse me.
I'd like to address some concerns provided by the North Dakota Department of Parks and Recreation. Since it may not be readily apparent from the application how these concerns were addressed, the department recommended selecting the southern corridor identified on the preliminary corridor map, avoiding the Cross Ranch Nature Preserve, and obtaining appropriate permits to cross any federal land and water conservation fund properties. Minn Kota did utilize the southern corridor. In addition, the proposed corridor does not cross the Cross Ranch Nature Preserve, and all federal land and water conservation fund properties have been avoided. We've also spoke with the Nature Conservancy regarding their properties near the Cross Ranch Preserve and in Sheridan County, and the Nature Conservancy properties are not within the project corridor, and there were no issues to be addressed. Additionally, Minn Kota continues to consult with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the appropriate line marking mitigation or line marking measures.
And have any agency comments been received since the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility application was filed?
Yes, the Environmental Assessment Comment Report was issued after the corridor application. In addition, we are also engaged in ongoing communication with various agencies, and updated information will be provided during the route permit proceedings.
And if you would look in the exhibit binder at what has been previously marked as Exhibit 20. Is this the environmental assessment comment report that you were referencing?
Yes.
And could you explain what the environmental assessment comment report is?
It's a report issued by the Rural Utilities Service that documents the comments and responses I received during the 30-day EA comment period.
And when was the environmental assessment comment report issued?
March of 2011.
I would offer the Exhibit 20.
Mr. Sagsveen.
I don't think I have any objections. Should this be considered a supplement to the November 2010 comment report in the permit application or a replacement?
The comment report.
What appendix are you referencing?
D.
D.
Is that the environmental assessment?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Assessment. It's not the comment report. It's just the environmental assessment. So this should.
This is in addition to that.
Okay. No objections.
Exhibit 20 is received.
In your opinion, and based on your study and review, the exhibits and testimony presented here today, and the citing statutes and rules, will construction of the proposed project within the proposed project corridor produce minimal adverse environmental effects?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Sagsveen.
I don't have any questions.
Mr. Lehan.
Just all of these waterfowl production areas and stuff that we described there, it appeared to me, looking at them, that none of them take up more than half the corridor width. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. And another question I had at looking at the route was there a reason that we could not parallel the McCluskey Canal or use part of that for right-of-way?
McCluskey Canal is a it's federal lands, and due to the PSC's siting criteria, we tried to stay away from those types of facilities.
Like it's an avoidance area or an exclusion area?
Correct.
It's not. I'd have to think about that one. And the homes that are within the corridor, what happens if some of those will not waive? Is there room to get around them in the corridor without violating the 500-foot statute?
Yes, we believe we can get a site or route within a corridor that will be 500 feet away.
Okay. And I think that's it for my questions. Thanks.
Commissioner Kramer.
No questions for this witness. Thank you.
Commissioner Call.
You know, Judge, I got to have questions.
You're the commissioner.
First, the question for Matt. Now, tell me, your question you asked about, was this a supplement for the comments? Explain to me what your question was there exactly, because I think I have a similar one. Because you testified 300 comments, and the exhibit has comments 303 to 350-something, 356. So where are the other 1 to 300 comments at?
The comment report has comments I received only during a 30-day EA comment period. So all of the 300 comments include all of the comments I received during the public involvement and agency outreach effort from basically 2009 to the present time. So there are some comments that are not included in that report.
So where would I find all the comments to read through?
There are some comments located or summarized within the scoping report. Otherwise, some of them were just ones that we collected at open houses.
I'd like to see the listing just like you did here of all the comments. And so if I don't know if we'd call it a late exhibit because this is going to be open for 3 days, or if you could maybe tomorrow present something better, because this is very helpful when you look at the page 2.1. It lays out the comment number, who commented, what their topic was. It'd be nice just to look through all of them. And mm-hmm. So if you maybe tomorrow you can lay out exactly where those might be, because there's some good things in there that I think will help us as we go through the decision process here.
Okay. There's also some comments that are highlighted within the macro corridor study as well.
Okay, I can look at those tonight then, because I'm sure we'll see each other tomorrow, right?
Okay.
How much were you involved in the route disqualification, if you will, all the way through from, you know, we started with a bunch of different choices, we narrowed it down to three. How much were you involved in that disqualification as far as related to environmental things?
I was involved in the disqualification.
But like, give me an example of how you would do that. I mean, how did you prepare the this is better, this is worse?
Right. Mostly we looked at, basically wetland areas, large wetlands, cultural resource sites, and some of the land use matters. And we would basically look at one segment and a segment that may be adjacent or near it or something like that, and we would have a discussion with our team and rule a particular segment out.
Were they weighted any differently, the factors, or are they all kind of the same?
Well, since the corridor crosses, you know, a large portion of the state, there are certain criteria in certain areas that may have differing factors upon the landscape, such as in the Red River Valley. there are not quite as many wetlands as in the Missouri River area. So, you know, some of the large wetlands in the Missouri River area kind of created more of a constraint than in the Red River Valley area.
Okay, I think somebody testified before about the beginning factors of crossing the two rivers was kind of a big issue to work with.
It's kind of a neck down point, right?
Okay. Do you think the delay in the Fonzie is administrative, or is there something that they're concerned about environmentally?
I think it's because we kind of had to narrow down the corridor, and we had to conduct some field analysis to find out, like, the whooping crane suitable habitat, to find out exactly where some of the line marking would occur. So I think it's more of sort of the process.
Okay.
And some of the field work efforts.
When you talk about comments, you refer to agencies. I assume that's other federal or state agencies. How do you classify a group like Ducks Unlimited if they would comment? Is that an agency, or is that just it's not an individual citizen? Do they have any different standing?
We basically kind of use them like a citizen or a non-government organization.
Okay. And then, you know, we get around and do a lot of hearings. A different company cited a transmission line, and there was a lot of discussion about bird flight deflectors. Have you had any discussion with the Fish and Wildlife Service or anyone about installing those? Because I think we had a hearing where I know we did. We had a hearing, and the company put them on, but I don't know if they were directed to do it or if they just chose to do it. I can't remember.
Okay.
But have you had any guidance that you might need to put the whooping crane bird flight deflectors on, for lack of a better term?
Yes, we've had discussions with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service regarding bird flight diverters.
So where's the status of that at? I mean, is that like something you'll have to do, or?
Currently, that's in discussion with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. More than likely, yes, we'll have to do that.
Okay. And then the last question is, do you have to participate or prepare a habitat conservation plan as part of this project? Different wind farms have done that. Has become almost like a deal breaker for them.
That has not been discussed, or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has not brought that up.
Have you asked the question?
We don't anticipate adverse effects due to this project, so thus we're not anticipating a habitat conservation plan.
I would just throw this out there just for thought, because there's projects that would appear that are farther away from the flyway that they've had to prepare habitat conservation plans, so I don't know, that may come out at some point in time. So that's all the question I had. Thank you.
Thank you.
Follow up, Ms. Smith.
I just wanted to clarify with respect to the McCluskey Canal. I think Mr. Lean asked about that. We've identified that as an area of recreational significance and therefore an avoidance area. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's all the questions I have.
Mr. Sagsveen.
Just one short follow up, please, Your Honor. The document that's Exhibit 20. Is the document that you provided the document that the government has produced, or is this an excerpt of another document?
This is what the Rural Utility Service produced.
Okay, so there isn't another few sections in a different spot, or?
No, this highlights the comments and the responses received during their 30-day EA comment review period.
And so what you've provided to us is exactly what you've received from the government?
Yes.
Okay. No further questions.
Mr. Lean?
No questions.
Anything further from the commissioners? Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. Just so I can, for clarification purposes for the record, with regard to comments, if a comment was made by a landowner to a land agent or perhaps at an open house that might have caused the company to make a change in the location of a structure or something, that might not have been documented, but it might have caused a change in the route, or change at least in location of a structure. Is that accurate? And that may not have been documented in evidence, but certainly it was a comment that might be part of the aggregate. Is that accurate?
Yes. All of our right-of-way agents enter all of their comments into a database.
So somewhere there is a database with all of those comments. Is that accurate?
With the right-of-way agents' discussions with landowners,
but perhaps
yes.
Not at a open house or something like that?
Some of those conversations can be private, so we don't want to publish them at an open house.
Okay, that's what I understand. Then one other question, because along the lines of Commissioner Kalk's questioning regarding bird diverters and whatnot, I'm thinking when we have a hearing perhaps more in the pothole region or in the first 100 miles or the western 100 miles where we are in prime Whooping Crane. Maybe we'll hear more about that. Is that possible?
Well, currently we, as a part of the Section 7 process, we are drafting what's called a biological assessment. That's a document to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that documents conservation measures. And currently, like I said, we're drafting that. We're going to hopefully submit that to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in a couple weeks here.
How about then with regard to taking, for example, we cite a lot of transmission lines, but we cite many more energy conversion facilities. So habitat is often more of a topic for a wind farm, whereas diverting or taking bird kill is more common to a transmission line. Is that an accurate statement?
Well, due to the small footprint of this project, we don't anticipate, or we anticipate having minimal effects upon the landscape.
All right, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Anything further from the commissioners?
Just maybe a follow-up. Kevin brought out a good point, because that's what I was trying to get to, is to show that there's been a lot of comments, and the agency is either has been responsive or hasn't been responsive to public input. So if there's something that the company can produce at that for later hearings, I think that'd be very helpful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further from the commissioners? Follow up, Ms. Smith.
I do have one. With respect to the comments that we're discussing, there's a difference, isn't there, between the comments that are acquired by Minn Kota and then the comments that are obtained by RUS as a formal part of the RUS process. Is that right?
Yes, all the comments received during all the comments that the RUS receives during the National Environmental Policy Act or NEPA process are contained within, summarized in some kind of document, whether it's the macro corridor study, scoping report, or the comment report.
So all of those comments during the RUS process are provided in some form in the application or in the exhibits that have been presented?
Yes.
And so the other comments that we have are just internal comments from Minn Kota, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Mr. Sagsveen.
Further questions.
Mr. Leon.
No questions.
Commissioners. Thank you very much, Mr. Hunkrew.
Thank you.
That concludes our direct testimony.
All right. We're going to take a 10-minute recess, at which time, if anybody has any specific questions concerning their testimony, any member of the public has any specific questions concerning their testimony, and especially if anyone has any exhibits, any documents which they would want to be made part of the record as part of their testimony, it is important that you bring those to me, that I get them marked so that and really so we can get the lawyers to get a look at them so we can save some time. In any event, 10 minutes, we'll be in recess for 10 minutes or until I call us back to order. Thank you.